From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. The alleged rape of an African-American woman by members of the Duke University lacrosse team continues to inflame passions in and around Durham. Last night, NC Central, where the woman is reportedly a student, hosted a vigil. Similar events have taken place at Duke. But the reaction may not be limited to planned events. The Durham Herald-Sun reported today that an assault at a local restaurant may have been motivated by race and class. Specifically, a Duke student claims to have been punched and threatened because he was wearing a Duke hat and his car sported a Duke sticker. Is this alleged assault an isolated incident, or is the rape case continuing as it continues to work its way through the legal system? Is there a potential for increased violence? And what are Duke and Durham leaders doing to try to head that off and rebuild what has always been a complicated relationship? Michael Palmer joins us now in the studio. Michael is a Duke University Director of Community Affairs, but not an outsider. He used to be Durham County's Deputy Manager. Michael Palmer, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
You are in a unique position to comment on these issues, having had a position in the city, a local government here and now at Duke. Is your sense that this alleged rape seems to have opened up some deep-seated, buried resentment, that there is a long-standing resentment that this reveals rather than has provoked?
I wouldn't say it has revealed. I think there have always been tensions in all communities, not just Durham. And I think in this case, what this situation has done has exposed a lot of subjects that people care about, but brought them to the front in terms of priority and things that they're focused on. I think all communities deal with issues of class, race, gender, etc. I think the upside of the Durham community is that we've always publicly discussed issues, and I think we've always moved forward from that.
Well, it may not be that perception may not be held widely in the community, that it may be, and you are a community relations director. There's an office at Duke that's
right.
Set up to do just this, so that by itself can be proof that the university cares about this and takes it seriously. But the perception does seem to be that Duke is its own on its own course and has little to do and is little concerned with the surrounding community.
Oh, I think that's definitely false. I think Duke has had a history of, I mean, Duke has been intertwined in the history of Durham since its beginning, and there are many, many contact points. That's why when you just talk about relationship with the community, it's not one relationship. You have, with over 20,000 employees, add another 10,000 or so contract employees, plus students, graduate students, etc. You have many points of contact. And what I know of the history of Durham, again, having been in local government and seeing things from the inside out, there have been many places along the way where Duke has partnered with the community to move forward on issues.
Yeah, does the community, and we're talking about the whole community, it's a hard thing to characterize, but does the Durham community believe that? Do they perceive what you may know to be true about Duke's contributions?
Well, it depends on who you ask. A lot, for example, in my office, we run a program called the Neighborhood Partnership, where we work with 12 neighborhoods that surround the two campuses on quality of life issues. This is actually the 10th year of the program. And in this program, we work on issues of academic support for students. So we have over 400 students, Duke students, that tutor in the schools and in the schools and in after-school programs. We've been involved in affordable housing. We've completed probably 80 or 90 units so far, with about 50 units in a land bank right now. So at those types of points of contact, those relationships are appreciated when people are working together for the common good. Also, with the community of Durham, a lot of projects like this facility that you're in here, the American Tobacco Complex, I mean, Duke took an anchor tenancy in this. So at the points where people know what's going on and the involvement, I think, this obviously is a topic that's on the agenda of those relationships.
Let's talk about some other aspects of the perceptions that have emerged now as this case develops. Last Friday, Larry Mineta, Duke Vice President for Student Affairs, sent a letter to members of the Duke community saying that tensions were high, suggested caution around town. Have you felt those tensions?
There have been. I think there are isolated incidents of that, because I think with the media stir around this issue, is definitely everyone in town has an opinion on this issue, and there's clear sensitivity to it. From the leadership of Duke on down to the Duke student. So in that sense, there is definitely, you know, issues for on both sides about what's anticipated. And I think, you know, a lot remains to be seen.
Do you think there's a potential for violence?
Personally, I don't believe so. I think there are enough good people in Durham. The leadership of North Carolina Central, Duke University, the mayor, pastors, and African-American clergy, folks have already come together and talked with very cool heads about this issue with the desire to let the legal process take its course. That was the message that came from Chancellor Ammons. So from a leadership perspective, we're all working towards trying to prevent any violence. But again, you know, can be responsible for every individual's behavior, but we hope not.
You talked about one of the programs and that are underway to help invest in the community, to help build low-cost housing, investment here in the Tobacco District. And yet the perception remains. The thing I hear everywhere from the checkout, you know, stand at Kroger's to the locker room at the Y is this: the one phrase that keeps coming up is children of privilege. Children of privilege shouldn't act that way. And I hear that from folks of all races. And it appears to me, if my eye is a judge from all classes, that's the phrase I keep hearing. If Duke is involved in the way that you say, and of course it is, with all these investments, why has that perception not taken hold as I walk around this community and just listen to random comments of people talking about this situation?
Well, I think that obviously, you know, Duke has been classified that way. However, you know, there are students there, 40% of the students there are on some type of financial aid. So I think it's real and perceived, but again, is not everyone there is not paying their own way. So in that sense, you have a lot of students that are representative of the profile of the United States.
Well, go ahead.
I think the perception, and I see that too. When I first came to Duke, I had a certain perception of what wealth is all about and what it's capable of doing and that sort of thing. And what I found is that inside of Duke University, there are a lot of caring individuals who want to address the issues and the ills of society, et cetera. There are more people who are... who are concerned about moving forward and who are concerned about fixing issues and addressing things than there are those that, say, take advantage of that position of privilege.
What do you think the university should do now?
Well, I think we do have to wait and see what comes out of this case, but independent of that, the president has met with he's met with quite a few folks. He's met with folks in the community. He's met with faculty. He'll meet with staff, just a good number of folks. And he's getting input from all sides. And I can say that there's nothing that I've heard in the community that I haven't heard discussed at the senior management level at the university. So we know that we have issues of cultural kind of misperceptions that need to be addressed. We know that there are always issues of race, sexuality, gender, all those things need attention. And I think in the aftermath of this, the leadership at both universities have come together and said that we will have to work on these issues. So when this, independent of where this goes in terms of what happens in the courts, those lingering issues will get attention in some constructive, substantial way.
You work with community leaders at the grassroots level. What are you hearing from them, and what are they making suggestions about ways that this kind of sentiment doesn't rise again?
Well, it runs the gamut. Of course, people have spoken to, you know, athletes and the culture within athletes, within different teams, the again, the cultural differences around class, you know, race and all those kind of things. So I think that we've gotten some recommendations from across the board on that.
Recommendations to do what?
Well, at this point, I would say let the administration when it's time to because at this point there's a lot of input gathering and a lot of discussion around things. So I would say that in time you will hear those things.
Do you think it's just a public relations problem for Duke? It just doesn't get the word out. Or is it deeper than that? Does something have to change?
I think a combination of both. I think that obviously we have to do some definitive things in addressing, you know, the issues that I already mentioned. And I think we probably have to do a better job communicating what's being done. Again, we're working in the 12 neighborhoods. We've probably done 200 units of housing. This problem of the partying in the Trinity Park neighborhood where this incident allegedly occurred, this problem has been there for quite some time. So in that sense, we did acquire those properties, ironically, several weeks ago.
In a way to address that problem.
Yeah, in a way and to eliminate that problem, because once those properties have, and we spent $3 million to do that, so after the students are allowed to stay there to honor the existing leases, but within a year or so, all the students will be gone.
Michael Palmer, thank you very much.
Okay.
Michael Palmer is Duke University's Director of Community Affairs. Just ahead, we'll talk more about the growing tensions in Durham with Mayor Bill Bell. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacia. We're talking today about Duke University's relationship with the city of Durham, and we're joined on the phone now by Durham Mayor Bill Bell. Mayor Bell, welcome to the program.
Good to be here, Frank.
We've talked about the town-gown relations in Durham. How would you describe the situation right now?
Well, in general, town-gown relations have been good in Durham in spite of some of the things you might hear to the contrary, and especially in spite of the latest incident. But I guess from the mayor's viewpoint and from members in the city, people I've talked to, we're really concerned about how the city is being portrayed nationally with all the media and TV and radio attention that we're getting. And we feel, unfortunately, it's an inaccurate picture of Durham that's being painted about us as a city, our economy, and our citizens. Durham is really a great city. It's built on a great history and a great future. And
What is it that you think is inaccurate?
Well, I think what the focus has been on, and has been to portray the situation where you've got Duke, a large, white, rich university, committing incidents throughout the community and preying on Durham, which is primarily a poor black city, which is very much not true. And that is what comes out, and that's what it seems to focus on, is sort of black-white race incidents that are constantly coming out. And, you know, Durham, like many other cities across the state, represents a changing, evolving, a very diverse city. We've transformed ourselves from tobacco textiles to city of medicine, high-tech, biotech. We're spending a great deal of money to redevelop our neighborhoods and our downtown area. And we've received a lot of accolades over the year from CNN and Forbes and et cetera.
Right, but at the moment, people are talking about this, and they are seriously concerned. What are you hearing about the concerns, and do you think that they're talking about a serious problem, or are they being stirred up by the media?
I think the media has probably caused more emotion to come into this than it needs to be. I didn't hear all of the conversation that you had with Michael Palmer, but I think the responsible person in this community have all agreed that this is a decision that has to go through the legal and police investigative issues and get to the court, and we're satisfied to let that happen. We've pledged from the city's viewpoint that we're going to do all that we can from the police viewpoint to try to do the investigation as quickly and expeditiously as possible. The DA has indicated they're going to do the same, and we'll let it go, that process. But there are other issues that obviously we have to deal with. But in throughout of all of this, constantly what you hear is, you know, Duke, Dwight University, rich white kids, preying on, you know, Durham, poor black community, a gritty community, struggling with economy, struggling with crime, and et cetera. And that's not Durham.
Well,
and
if that's not the case anymore, and we have to take you know, we'll take it on face value that it's not, why is that still the strongly held perception in this area?
Because I think what it does, it gets people's attention, okay? It gets people's attention. If they focus as much on the fact of the accomplishments that have occurred in this community, the diversity which we pride ourselves on, the way we've been able to cooperate, that wouldn't get the attention of people who want to read and, you know, listen to what they have to report.
So but are you saying that there is no genuine concern here, that this is simply a kind of a media fiction?
There is a concern that something occurred, and we need to find out what. And we are satisfied to allow it to work through its process. We also realize that there are other issues that have been below the surface relative to race that are going to have to be accounted for. And we've had dialogue with the president of the university at Duke, Broadhead, Chancellor Ammons, many of the leaders in the black community. And what we've agreed is, let's look at two parallels. Let the court process proceed, but then let's come back and have further dialogue on these other issues that have been below the surface and now seem to be coming up. And it's a fashion in which you do that. And
well,
let's talk
about that a little bit, those below-the-surface tensions. What do you think can be done to address those, to give a little more realistic picture of the situation that you say is now the case in Durham?
Well, let me tell you one thing that probably needs to be done and made clear. I think somehow some clear guidelines as to what type of student and faculty behavior will not be tolerated. And the consequences should be made known to not just the people who are members of the Duke community, but also to the community of what the consequences are if these things are violated. That isn't very clear. It's one thing to be told that we won't tolerate this. It's another thing to be told that here are the consequences that if you do violate that. And again, those things will work themselves through, and I'm comfortable that they will. But meanwhile, we're trying to deal with a lot of emotion, and that, I guess, and not present what I consider to be a very clear picture of really what the city of Durham is like while we try to deal with that.
Are you satisfied that the criminal investigation, both from the district attorney's point of view, from the district attorney's office and the police investigation, are being handled properly and quickly enough?
At this point, I have no reason to think otherwise. It gains us nothing to delay trying to bring this information forth, nothing at all. And I've said before, we've made it very clear from our office, the manager, and the police chief that we're going to do that. Right now, the DNA is over at the state level. Even when it was taken over there, I made a call to the Attorney General's office to say, hey, this is important enough, and we hope you consider it a priority that you would expedite this investigation, this analysis, when it comes to us. And they agreed, and I assume that they're doing that.
Are you satisfied with the way Duke University has handled it so far, the situation?
Well, again, we can always look back in hindsight and say, but for this, you should have done that. The fact of the matter is, we are where we are. I'm satisfied with the fact that Duke understands the seriousness of it, that they're going to try to do all that they can to correct the things that need to be corrected.
There has certainly been a lot of media coverage. Has that coverage overshadowed other important things that are happening in the city right now?
Well, you know, it's almost like when you have a Final Four basketball tournament, everybody gets up and focuses on it at the moment, and you don't hear about other things that happen in the community. I think this is what's happening with this particular issue, because good things are happening in Durham. It's not just a sin, it's a fact. We would hope that we would get back to reporting those good things rather than focusing on this particular issue.
All right, Mayor Bell, thank you very much.
Sure.
Mayor Bill Bell is speaking with us from his office today. We're talking today about the situation in Durham as tensions rise over the alleged rape by the lacrosse team at Duke University. Joining me now in the studio is Bob Ashley, the editor of the Durham Herald Sun, and welcome back to the program, Bob.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be here.
On the phone is Ken Rogerson. He's a research director of the DeWitt Wallace Center for Media and Democracy at Duke University. Ken, welcome.
Thanks, Frank.
talking a little bit about the media coverage so far. Ken, as you look at the media coverage of this incident, do you think that the media has been irresponsible so far?
Once again, I appreciated what Mayor Bell said before. I mean, what is. And I'm sure we could look back and analyze it and see a number of different ways that they might have done. But what has happened, and I think that the story itself lends itself to some sensationalist kinds of issues and some race and some class issues. And regardless of where you are locally or nationally, you're going to find that newsworthy to some extent.
But Bob Ashley, does it represent an underlying concern or underlying tensions in this city, or have they been inflamed by the coverage, or what combination of those two?
Frank, at the risk of trying to say two things at once, I'll say yes to both questions. Mm-hmm. I think it clearly... There are underlying issues that have been brought to the fore and I would say exacerbated and in some cases inflamed by the current incident. There's been tension for years, decades, between Duke and some parts of the community. Clearly the issues of race and sex that are caught up in this are issues that may be dormant but exist, and I hasten to point out, not just in Durham but in cities all across the country.
We've read warnings. The university administrators are warning. The university students are issuing their own warnings. The student government suggesting that there may have been a report or a plan for drive-by shootings. We heard of a possible assault at a restaurant the other night. Is there a sense, Bob, that tensions are growing to a flashpoint, that there may be more violence?
I don't sense that they're going to a flashpoint that may bring more violence. I really don't. Clearly, they're heightened. I think everybody is a bit uneasy. You know, one of the interesting things here is we're discussing the media role in how this is portrayed. A good bit of the inflammation and a good bit of the heightened concern, if you will, is being fueled really not by normal media, but by the interaction on the blogs and listservs that that Durham has quite a few of and are quite active and vociferous. This discussion's going on at a bunch of different levels. It's going on in person, it's going on in the internet, and it's going on in the traditional media. And I think all of those are sort of interacting with each other to have people predisposed, perhaps, to be on edge. And we've been in this now for 10 days of fairly intense coverage nationally and internet, nationally and locally. And I think that's certainly contributed to people being a bit, if not gun-shy, and that may be the poor choice of phrases, a little bit more nervous than they otherwise would be.
Ken Rogerson at the DeWitt Wallace Center for Media and Democracy at Duke. Have you been keeping an eye, I'm sure, on the national coverage? How would you portray? You heard Bill Bell saying, look, folks are coming in here. They're making it a simple race issue. They're making it a simple class issue, trying to portray a poor black city and an uppity white university. And that portrayal is not fair. Is that the way you think that this has been portrayed in the national media? Has it been fair?
Certainly, to a certain extent, that's a newsworthy kind of issue. As news media, or as media organizations out there decide what to cover in the news, something that has tense racial class undertones, plus some overt sexual act, as Bob rightly pointed out, that is going to lead them in there. Certainly one thing that has come up is whether or not this is a type of parachute journalism that we hear about often as large media organizations drop into places of conflict in the world, do a little story, and then pop out again. Does that do us a disservice? Yeah, I think it kind of does a disservice. We don't understand the context of what's going on. But at the same time, we don't know about what's going on if no one ever goes there. And I think that's what the national media is doing, is they're picking up on something, they're reporting on it, and then it just kind of gets cut off. So yeah, I think that is a disservice, but I'm not sure that we can expect any more or less. That's what's happening right now, and I think that we need to respond better maybe as a community rather than simply complaining about what the national media is doing.
But there's another side to parachute journalism as well, and that is that perhaps that journalist doesn't know the context, they don't know the full history. On the other hand, this is a pair of fresh eyes that's not tainted or in any way biased, and that pair of fresh eyes might reveal or discover more than perhaps even the local press who lives with it every day.
That's a great way to put it, but I also think that sometimes journalistically we rely so much on anecdotes Whereas if there was a broader picture, we talk about the loss of investigative journalists in this country and people who can look at trends and patterns over time. Simply relying on anecdotes can give us an insight or a picture in a moment, but it doesn't really tell us what's going on in the situation, I don't think.
Bob Ashley, how do you cover a situation like this? You're at the Durham Herald Sun. You are in the middle of this. You do have to make characterizations. You do have to present some kind of a context, but it's awfully difficult to generalize in this situation.
Well, it is, and it's easier for us, and it's easier for all the local media, frankly, to try to avoid some of the greatest pitfalls that await the national media. And we do understand the context. We do understand the community. Our obligation on this story is to be as aggressive and thorough as we can be, as complete and fair as we can be, knowing on a practical level, professional level, that we're competing not just with our usual competitors, but some of the top media outlets in the country. And do we have a discussion every morning about worrying about whether or not somebody is going to find a critical development in this story, from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution or something that we don't have? Absolutely. So it heightens the pressure on us. It certainly heightens the challenge. But it's what you do. This is certainly not the first taste that we've had in Durham, or those of us who've been elsewhere, of national media descending on a story that's a local story. The one advantage we have, or two advantages, one is we do have some context and sense of history, and two, when all those folks pack up their gear and go off to the next story du jour, or story du week, we'll be here, and we'll be here along with the other local media trying to cover the story that I think Michael Palmer alluded to and others have alluded to, and Maribel, and that is, where do we go from here? How does this community heal the rifts that have been, if not caused, certainly exacerbated, certainly brought into high relief in some cases in this incident. And that's going to be our obligation going forward, not just to cover the story as it unfolds over these next few days and couple of weeks.
Ken Rogerson, as the principals in this crisis, the folks at Duke, the people in City Hall try to figure out where to go next, to what extent does media coverage like this, particularly when it does inflame passions, force them into PR mode? In other words, they want to protect their reputations versus, say, fix the problem, and maybe march them into a situation where they feel like we don't have time for that, and people are going to get real excited. So we just need to kind of paper this over and make us look good.
I think that there's a natural tendency to think they are doing that, but I think Bob brought up something really important before about the blogs and the internet and other types of news sources, even though I don't particularly like this phrase, but traditional news sources versus new news sources. There's a lot going on out there as far as discussion and encouragement to say more. I also think that the very unique situation that the lacrosse team didn't come out with a public statement immediately kind of exacerbated things a little bit as well. But yes, certainly, that's what a university or any type of major organization, the government does this as well, is they kind of go into PR mode, which is, we want to be honest and open with you, but we also understand that not all the facts are out there yet, so please be patient with us as we gather the information. So I don't think you can put too much blame on the university for their timetable. They're a large organization. They want to choose their words carefully and choose their position carefully, but they also would like to be right. I agree with some of the with some of the complaints that they should have come out a little bit sooner and said something a little more concrete, but I'm not sure that they felt like they were in a position to do so and still be as fair as they possibly could.
Bob Ashley, as you read your competitors' stories in the national media, do you think that, by and large, those stories have fairly characterized the city?
Well, I think it's covered the gamut, Frank. I agree partly, again, as a resident of Durham as well as a journalist, with some of what Maribel has said, which is there's a little bit of a tendency to caricature a Durham, sort of the impoverished old faculty town up against the rich elite university down the street. There is a little bit of truth to that. Some of that is old truth. This was much more a factory town, and frankly, much more isolated from Duke when I was here, 3 decades ago than it is now. On the other hand, I think some of the reporting has been quite good. I think the New York Times, I think to some extent MSNBC, which I've seen some coverage of, they're working at this story, but again, they're parachuting in. They picked up a storyline or two that they're going to flog throughout this, race, sex, class, elite university, poor community, and that's going to come back around over and over again.
You know, let me take this from a completely different point of view. Given the issues involved, given the seriousness of the issues, the emotion surrounding the issues that are raised here, and the depth of resentment and the history of these two, are you in some way surprised that the only thing people are doing is talking about it, that there hasn't been more a public demonstration of outrage? We really haven't seen that.
Well, yeah, you've seen some. I mean, certainly there was the Saturday night and Sunday morning demonstrations in the neighborhood. Some of that was clearly driven by people close by. You had a couple of rallies on the Duke campus and now on the NC Central campus. Again, Mayor Belt says something in a paper yesterday morning that I thought was really telling. He said this is, I can't remember the exact words, but either this is an activist community or this is a protesting community. This draws out sort of Durham at its essence. We want to get out there and talk about it and protest about it and argue about it. At the same time, I think most people do want to approach this, no matter how strenuously they feel about it, with some sense of reason and some sense of civility may be the wrong word in a couple of cases, but at least that this is something to protest about and talk about, not something to further complicate the issue with violence or some more venal acts.
All right, Bob Ashley, thank you very much. Editor of the Durham Herald Sun, thanks a lot, Bob.
Thank you, Frank.
And Ken Rogerson, Research Director of the DeWitt Wallace Center for Media and Democracy at Duke University, thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you, Frank.
Just ahead on the State of Things, we're taking a closer look at the high school experience. It's the subject of our spring series, North Carolina Voices. We'll give you a preview in just a moment. Stay with us.